This is Dishin' Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent's craft. And greetings, everyone, from beautiful downtown Columbia. As I'm sitting here the second week of March, looking out my window at this beautiful blue sky and 70 degrees, which always makes me realize why I love living in South Carolina so much. Such a beautiful day outside. This is Gary Pickren. I am the somewhat talented but mainly sarcastic host of Dishin' Dirt with Gary Pickren, and I am coming to you from downtown Columbia, Blair Cato Castellan's office, deep inside the office, door closed, ready to start Dishin' Dirt with you today. So today's show, we're going to talk about winners and losers. Are you a winner or are you a loser? I hope that you're not a loser, and I can tell you the way the industry seems to be going, more of you seem to be winners these days than losers. But we're going to talk about that, whether you're a winner or a loser, and how to make sure that you remain a winner in this marketplace today. Second thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about a little bit about this fingerprinting. Nobody seems to know what to do with your fingerprinting requirements on renewing your license, so we'll look at that real quickly. We're also going to talk about continuing education, when you can get your classes. And then we're going to move into something new on our episode that's going to be our marketing minute. There's a little bit of advice on some things that you might want to look at doing while marketing in real estate. And then, of course, we'll end it with Gary's Good News Only. And there's nothing but good news out there. The numbers are starting to look outstanding for COVID. I truly believe the end is in sight. So that's what we're going to do today. Now, let's jump right into winners and losers. And I hope that you're not a loser. I don't think y'all are, but you're listening to the show. So if you're listening to the show, it already makes you a winner. But let's talk about winners and losers. Now, back in May of 2020, when we were in the midst of the hardest part of the pandemic, my financial advisor called me one day and said, we got some tough decisions to make. You know, where do we want to be in this market? He told me he thought the market was about to bottom out and we need to go heavy in a particular sector. I, at that point, really didn't care. We were all just in survival mode, whether we were trying to keep the firm open or we were just trying to stay home and stay away from people to stay healthy. So my financial advisor and I talked and we made the decision to go pretty heavy in that particular sector. And in my luck, which I typically don't have luck when it comes to these matters, the day we made that decision was the day that the market had bottomed out and then it began to rise. So I was able to be a financial winner in those investments because I was lucky to have picked the day that the market absolutely hit the bottom number. So in every financial crisis, we all know there's winners and losers. If you've ever watched the show Billions, one of the main things you find out in that show is that the main character made his billions of dollars because of the result of 9-1-1. So in every crisis, whether it's 9-1-1 or whether it is the pandemic or it's the recession that we suffered in the late 2000s, there's always people who win and people who lose. So let's, first of all, let's look at some losers and winners in our pandemic. So without a doubt, probably in my opinion, one of the biggest winners of the pandemic was Zoom. Zoom has become a verb. People did not know what Zoom was 13, 14 months ago. Now, when people want to do face-to-face, instead of saying we're going to FaceTime, now oftentimes it's like, let's have a Zoom meeting. I think their numbers went from 10 million uses a day to somewhere in the couple hundred million uses a day. In fact, everybody Zooms now. That's how we conduct our continuing education classes. It's how we conduct meetings. A lot of things that we do are now on Zoom. So they are a huge winner of the pandemic. The second big winner would obviously be streaming services. Because everybody was locked down at home and people were afraid to go out, Netflix, Amazon, Prime, Hulu, you name it, these services skyrocketed. I went from having, I think we had satellite at the time, to now we have Hulu, we have Netflix, we got Prime, we have them all. Grocery stores obviously benefited as well because people simply weren't going out anymore and they were staying home. And having two teenage kids, I could see the painful grocery bills. And I know a lot of you that have teenage kids, particularly teenage boys in high school, your grocery bill probably doubled or tripled as well. But the biggest winner in all of this financial crisis and this pandemic that we had was an unlikely group, toilet paper manufacturers. Never in my lifetime did I ever think that Charmin would be the United States national currency, nor did I think we would have black market Charmin or that we would have Facebook groups that would tell you when toilet paper was coming out. I literally remember somebody on Facebook going, they have toilet paper at Sam's. And then you run to Sam's and there's a line out the door to go pick up toilet paper. I still have yet to this day to understand what toilet paper and COVID had to do with each other, but whatever. Who were the big losers? The big losers obviously was the service industry. Anything related to service, people were just avoiding because they didn't want people be around people. They didn't want people in their houses. Obviously hotels, people were not traveling. So every hotel, their numbers were way down. Restaurants, it became almost a patriotic thing to do was to eat out on a Friday, Saturday night. And eat out meant you drove, you picked it up curbside, which was actually one of the great things that came out of COVID was the ability to pick up curbside dining, which we really didn't have in Columbia. But restaurants, boy, did they get hit hard. People who worked at restaurants, waiters, cooks, they all really took it hard on the chin. And luckily for Columbia, most of our restaurants have been able to come back. But we did lose a lot of really good restaurants like Solstice. We lost Solstice up in the Northeast. And I know in Greenville, they've lost some restaurants as well. Barbers and gyms, hairstylists, all of those were hurt because people were going months upon months without getting haircuts, weren't going to gyms anymore, which ironically was one of the dumbest things because people that were unhealthy and obese, that was one of the biggest factors, and gyms would have helped fix that. So I think we'll see it during this, that a lot of the decisions that we made early on, whether it was a lockdown or closing schools completely, were probably bad decisions in the end. But people were making decisions on the best they could. Obviously, one of the worst losers, the biggest losers, I'd say, would be airlines. Nobody was traveling for the longest time. And if you traveled at all last summer, you would get on a plane with very few people. But even if your plane was packed, there were very few routes that were even being offered. So now let's look at companies that learned how to pivot. Because in any industry, as that industry or as the market is changing on that industry, those who don't change with the market go out of business. Those who pivot, and it reminds me of the Friends episode where Ross kept saying, pivot, pivot, when he was trying to move the couch. It's one of the funniest Friends episodes if you ever watched that show from the 90s. But those companies that actually pivoted, those were the companies who actually made it work. Think about restaurants and how they pivoted. They quickly pivoted and offered curbside dining. And a lot of places, while they couldn't give you curbside alcohol, would give you the mixers. I remember buying margarita mixes at Mexican restaurants so that we could have a margarita. So those restaurants pivoted. Now, were they huge winners in this? Probably not. But what they did was it allowed them to stay in business. When companies pivot, they can go from losing to hopefully surviving or breaking even. So how did these companies win? How did the Netflix of the world and the others win? Well, it's because they did something. They had something that people wanted, something that people needed, and something that people could not do by themselves. So what was that? Well, first of all, had something that people wanted. People wanted entertainment. They wanted to forget. They wanted to put their head in the sand and forget this whole thing happened. Netflix, Amazon, Prime, Hulu, they all provided entertainment. They also were companies out there that provided things that people needed. Grocery stores, they provided food. We still had to eat regardless of what was going on in the pandemic. And so we were able to get to grocery stores and buy food. And then the people that could do things that we couldn't do ourselves was Zoom meetings, because we could not meet face-to-face as a group, as a church board, as a neighborhood association, whatever it was, nobody could meet face to face. In fact, we're even doing Zoom meetings for court now. It's really incredible stuff. And so, as you can see, providing something that people wanted, people needed, and people could not do themselves. So that's how I believe that real estate was obviously a huge winner in all of this. Y'all, as real estate agents, were huge winners. Y'all were able to provide something people wanted, which was bigger houses because they were now working from home. They were staying home, so they wanted new houses. So you were able to provide something that people wanted. Also, people needed new housing because their three-bedroom house no longer worked for them when they had two children in school, online. They had nowhere for them to work as well as their kids to go to school. So they needed a bigger house with a playroom or that fourth bedroom. And it was something that people couldn't do themselves because people were not allowing people to go into houses back when COVID first happened. Remember, it was very strict on people being allowed in your house when it first came out. So people could not get into houses. You could go as a real estate agent and preview a house and show them by FaceTime or Zoom meeting what the house looked like. So you were able to go ahead and do things that they were unable to do for themselves. So when I look back at how real estate pivoted and how they became a winner, you looked at things such as the safety protocols, the face masks that people were wearing in house, the hand sanitizers, the fact that agents could preview houses while your client sat at home. You could walk the house with the iPad and show them everything. You could provide them information about markets and trends. And so you were able to do things that made you a winner. And luckily, so far, we have been winners. Now, part of that also is we've been benefit of very low interest rates, which are now starting to go up, but is not really having an adverse effect on the market. So during this crisis, a lot of y'all became winners by happenstance. Some of you became winners by positive actions you took, and some of y'all did not. There was a huge disconnect amongst some real estate agents. And even those that became winners somehow did it without even knowing how they did it. So let's look at the big disconnect and see how do you become a winner in the market? How do you stay a winner? Because obviously interest rates are now over 3%. So how is that going to affect it? Your broker and other agents can share with you a multitude of ideas for marketing and things of that nature. I'm not here to tell you this is the magic marketing idea and this is how you do it and you're going to be successful. I have my ideas on how to do it. We'll share those in other podcasts, but that's not what the point of this podcast today. The point of this podcast is to talk about the main problem, which is preventing you from becoming a winner and staying a winner. For most of you, most agents, it's not that you can't come up with a good idea, or an agent won't tell you a good idea, or you can't copy a good idea from another market or another agent. It's that most of you wonder the then what. And that's not an issue just related to real estate agents. That's an issue related to any business and anybody who tries to market. A marketing company can come in and say, hey, we've got this great idea on you marketing it. And you hand them the keys to the car. They just don't know how to drive the car. And so what we need to do today is talk about the then what. What do you have to do to take what people tell you, what your BICs offer you, your brokers in charge offer you, and try to implement this into a viable action? And the way to do that is very simple. It's called planning. So let's talk about planning for a second. I'm not a huge sports analogy fan, but I think sports actually works in this scenario. So every game has to have its plan. And when there's no plan, there's no success. And that's the same for you in real estate while you're trying to navigate yourself through the ending of the pandemic, because it is truly ending, I believe. As we enter this new phase with higher interest rates, we're going to have inflation. Congress just basically gave away $2 trillion without, and how we're not going to have inflation off that, I don't know how anybody thinks that. We're already seeing it at the gas pump. Gas is already up to $2.50 since January. So things are changing, and they're changing quickly. So if you're not willing to pivot, adapt, and plan in this market as we change out of the pandemic, you may have been successful all through the pandemic because of happenstance, low interest rates. Now is the time you've really got to sit down and figure out, what am I going to do next? And when I look at sports analogies, let's look at Clemson football. I am not a Clemson fan, so don't think I'm sitting here praising Clemson. In fact, I'm a Gamecock, and I have suffered through this whole Clemson thing. But do you think that Clemson football became successful without Dabo Swinney coming up with a plan? And do you think he came up with a plan before setting his goals, or do you think he set goals and plans in a particular order? I personally think he set his goals first, and then he set his plan. So what were Clemson's goals, or what are their goals? Well, first of all, national championship is probably not the first goal. That's the final goal. In order for Clemson to win a national championship, there's other goals along the way that they have to meet. Whether this is Clemson or Carolina football doesn't matter. You have to win all of your games, or almost all of your games. You may be able to lose one. You've got to win your conference your regular season conference championship. If you're Clemson, you've got to win the ACC regular season championship. If you're South Carolina, you need to win the SEC East. After that, you've got to win your conference championships game. You can't get to a national championship in most cases unless you win the SEC championship or you win the ACC championship game. So that's another goal. Then you have to win. You have to be invited to the playoffs. Then the next goal is you have to have a goal of winning the first round playoff. And then your final goal is to win the national championship. So there are a lot of steps along the line, along the way, that you have to complete. So when you start thinking of goals, my goal isn't I'm going to sell 100 houses for 2021. It has to be an incremental goal. What is my goal this week? What is my goal next month? What's my goal for the summer? What's my goal going to be for the year? And I think a lot of people mess that up in the fact that I think they just set this ultimate goal of winning a national championship, but they don't set the goals along the way to get there. So the second thing you have to look at, is your goal realistic? I don't think Dabo Swinney setting a goal of winning a national championship is unrealistic. I mean, they don't really play anybody. They're in the ACC. Sorry, Clemson fans, I had to take a shot at you. But is it realistic for Shane Beamer to say his goal this year is to win the national championship? No. I think a more realistic goal for him is to win more games than he loses. If he goes 7-5, I think it's an absolute win, amazing season for him. So now that Dabo or Shane has set their goals, does it in there? No, it does not in there. It now turns to planning. Does Dabo Swinney sit down today and start planning out that national championship game and how he's going to run his offense and defense? No. His plan starts much earlier than that. It starts with recruiting. Before he even starts thinking about a national championship game, he has to start recruiting. And recruiting this year is keeping the players from going to the pro, keeping players from entering the transfer portal and leaving to go to a different school, and recruiting players to replace the seniors and the juniors that left already. So his planning starts way beyond and way before we even start talking about the football season. Then he has to start planning his summer practice. Then he plans his fall practices and what he's trying to accomplish, what type of changes in his offense or defense he's going to make. Then he has to start planning for each of the 12 individual games that they will play. Then he may start planning ahead a little bit for the ACC championship game, recognizing who his competition might be. Then he's going to start planning for what he's looking to plan in the future for the national championship playoffs. And then perhaps then he'll start looking at the national championship game. But all that planning starts today and doesn't start the week he gets to the national championship game. He's starting before he even starts playing. So he's setting out both short-term, long-term goals, but also short-term plans and long-term plans. He's starting today. So how does that affect you as a real estate agent? Well, as a real estate agent, start looking at this completely different. Most real estate agents I talk with, they'll tell me what their goals are. I'm going to do 100 units, or I'm going to do 57 buyer sides this year. You've got to start looking at your goals in lineal sense, starting with what the goal is this week, this month, this season, this year. You also have to start looking at your plan of how you're going to get to those goals. So the first thing you need to do is set out, what are your goals? And I would not start with what is your 2021 goal, or what is your goal now that the marketplace is getting ready to go through a major transition. Your goal should be is, how do I get to the summer? What is my first goal to get through March, April, and May? Then what my second goal may be is, all right, the summer, my summer months of June, July, and August, what are my goals going to be for that? Then what are my goals going to look like going into the fall? We're going to have a tremendously different fall because kids will be going back to school. We're going to have colleges reopening. We should have college football. So how does my fall look in terms of my goals? And then what is my winter going to look like? What's my Christmas going to look like? A completely different Christmas will probably happen this year because as people get vaccinated, we'll have people traveling again, going to Christmas, having Christmas get-togethers in the houses. So how is that going to affect people's housing needs? So that is the first thing, is to set out your goals in that sense. Now, are your goals, should your goals rather be set based on units? I'm going to do 50 closings. Well, that's great if all 50 of them are $500,000. But what happens if all 50 of them are $2,000 properties? It's not a very good goal. So in addition to look at your goal in terms of units, you need to look at your goals in terms of dollars. Quite frankly, I wouldn't even care about units. When we set out our goals at the firm, we don't do it based on closings. We do it based on dollar values. Because if I do 5,000 closings and make X, but I can do 1,000 closing and make X times 2, I'd rather do less closings and make more money. So that's what you really need to be looking at, is dollars, not just units. So how much money do I want to make before the end of the summer? How much money do I want to make before the end of the spring, actually? How much money do I want to make during the summer? How much money do I want to make during the fall? And set out your goals and the most important thing to you, which is dollars. Dollars are more important than terms of units sold. What are your dollar goals this week, this month, the next 2 months for the summer? Have that in front of you. Focus on that and have that be your driving force. And that's very important because I think when you have dollars in front of you, and my goal in May is I want to make $10,000 in commissions, you have a true goal that means a financial sense to you. Saying that in May I want to do 3 closings, it just doesn't equate to the same number for me. I don't know that I'm as driven by I want to do 3 seller sides or 3 buyer sides as I am I want to collect $10,000 in commission for my pocket. Once you have these goals set out, then you have to really start looking at your plan. Is my goals, first of all, legitimate so that I can even enter a plan? So, for instance, if in 2020, in the greatest real estate market we've had in years, I only sold 5 houses, is my goal of doing 100 even legitimate for 2021? The answer is probably no. I'm not going to go from 5 in 2020 to 2021 doing 100. So first of all, am I being honest with myself, and is my goal even legitimate? After I'm honest with myself and I realize whether my goal is honest or not, either readjust my goals or I'm ready to move forward with the second part, which is planning. These numbers aren't just going to fall in your lap. And I think a lot of disconnect, our agents say, well, my goal this year is 25 closings. And then I say, okay, what's your plan to get there? What do you mean? Well, you did 10 last year. You're going to go to 25 this year. What are you going to do different? Well, I'm just going to keep working hard. Everybody's working hard. That's not an answer. So your question to yourself has to be, what am I going to do different? What am I going to do in addition? What am I going to do better that's going to make these additional closings come to me? It's not going to just fall in your lap because you want to have it happen or you make a goal. Too many people make goals that are not even viable in the first place, but then they do nothing to get there. So what you need to do, first of all, is look at your past experiences. What have you done in your past year, past month, past 6 months, that was successful? And what I mean successful is based on return on investment. How much time did you spend to cultivate that one closing or that one unit or that $5,000? How long did it take me? Was it worth my time? So you need to look at everything that you've done in 2020, maybe even back to 2019, and see if it was successful. For those things that were successful, look at those things and see how I can make them even more successful. Can I improve on them? Because good people in your market are every day trying to improve what they're doing. And if you're not improving what you were doing to get your business, somebody else will, and they'll come and take yours. So what I had in 19 and 20 that was successful, how can I improve on that? What did I do in 2020 that perhaps wasn't successful? I might like being part of some type of organization or some referral group, but if I'm not getting enough closings out of it for the amount of time that I'm putting into it, is it worth it? Does it have value? Was there any value? Which brings me to point three, was what I doing too expensive? If I am spending $10,000 on a marketing piece that results in one closing that nets me $3,000 in fees, that's not working for me. That's too expensive. It's not successful. How about if I spend $10,000 on a marketing campaign that nets me $10,000 in fees? Is that successful? No, that's not successful. It's too expensive. It's not working. But how about if I spent $10,000 on a marketing thing that resulted in $100,000 in fees? Now, that might be something that's not too expensive. The other thing that agents often forget is time has value. It's not just how much it cost you. How much time did you spend doing it? If you have to be part of a referral group 3 hours every single week for 50 weeks, and the net result to you is two closings that netted you $6,000, was 3 hours times 50 weeks, 150 hours, worth that? Maybe it was to you, not to me, but you have to look and see how much time and how much money I'm spending on it. Next, you have to look at new targets. Are there new targets in this market that I can hit? We don't have foreclosure properties. We don't have a lot of PCSing in the military. So what are my new targets and what's my likelihood of success in getting those targets? What is my broker telling me about new opportunities? Listen to your broker. The reason your broker's a broker is because they know this stuff. Do they have other opportunities that I am not looking at? Do I have past clients, past circle of influence, a new circle of influence? There's a million answers here, million different answers that are different for everybody. The point being is you need to sit down in a quiet place with pen in hand, paper in front of you, and write down where these opportunities are. Are they going to be too expensive in time? Are they going to be too expensive in money? And what is my true likelihood that I can do it? So in conclusion, we know from studies that people who plan their days are typically more successful at their job than people who are chronically late, miss deadlines, forget appointments, overbook their schedule, work late into the night, and they're less successful and they struggle because they don't have planning. If you want to be successful in 2021 post-pandemic, you have got to set goals, you've got to set plans, and you've got to be willing to pivot your business today and throughout this plan. So I hope that helps you guys understand the change in the pandemic that we're about ready to see and how important it is you to plan ahead. Oh, a real quick update on a couple of things. Classes for MCE and CE, you can go to our website at blaircato.com. You can sign up for the Realtor Code of Ethics for March 16th. The core class, which you're required to take, the MCE class, March 23rd. The Broker in Charge class is going to be offered only one time this year. It's April 27th. These classes are all offered by the Central Carolina Realtors Association and are free to its members. However, if you're not a member, you still can sign up and take the class. I think they charge you $50. I am the guest speaker on all of those classes. Check back periodically. We will be adding more classes along the way. As to fingerprinting, I still have no update. I understand there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen over there trying to come up with the answer. As soon as I have an answer from my source over there, I'll let you know what the fingerprinting is going to be. Now, let's roll into our marketing minute. So let's talk about Instagram. I know a lot of y'all are using Instagram. A lot of you use it very well. A lot of you don't use it very well at all. And talking to my marketing director, Claudia, she brought up something that everybody should be doing in our business. Your Instagram page should be set up as a business page and not as an individual page. And there's apparently, if you go into settings, there's an easy way to switch it over to a business page. Now, the reason you want to move it to a business page is you can track the analytics. When you track the analytics, you can see people that are looking at your page, how often, if they're watching the whole engagement or they are moving out. But it also brings us to the most important point is to quit posting so much in Instagram and start using stories more. Stories are the little circles at the top of the page. And what we're able to see is that more and more people are not flipping through the post. They are actually, it's too much noise there. They're actually going to the stories and clicking on the stories. If you're set up as a business page, you can go through there and you can look at the analytics and see how many people are looking at your story, how long they're staying on the story, how if they're watching the whole thing, if they're coming back and watch it more. So it gives you more engagement. So look at your Instagram, decide if it's best for you to move it over to a business page and to start tracking your views by looking at Instagram story. If you have any questions on how to use Instagram successfully, contact Claudia at my office. You can be reached at claudia@blaircato.com. She's more than happy to help all the real estate agents with their marketing needs. And that's our marketing minute. And now to Gary's good news only. So the State House, South Carolina, just passed a fantastic new law. This is a law that says you can't slow drive in the left-hand lane. Now, supposedly, if you are caught slow driving in the left-hand lane on the interstate, they can fine you or give you up to 30 days in jail. Now, personally, I don't think that's severe enough. I think these people should be publicly shamed and have to wear T-shirts that says, I'm a left-lane slow driver. I don't know, something to get them to stop it. Origination volume hits 15-year-plus record. According to Black Knight, they report that a record-breaking $4.3 trillion in mortgages was originated in 2020, with $2.8 trillion in refinances, which was also an all-time high, and $1.5 trillion in purchase loans, largest annual volume since 2005. According to Yahoo Finances, they said that the rising mortgage rates will not derail the red-hot housing market. They said that you're seeing rates starting to rise, but thus far it does not appear housing has been thrown much off of its stride. The consumer has certainly lost some of its buying power in the last couple of weeks, but still is doing pretty well. Now, there's a new possible medication that can actually treat coronavirus. Instead of thinking this is a vaccine, think of this on the same lines as a Tamiflu. They just announced, I read this on Fox News, that the first stage testing of the experimental COVID-19 pill, and I'm going to spell it for you, it's MOLNUPIRAVIR, which is a Merck and Ridgeback biotherapeutics medicine, is showing promising signs of effectiveness in reducing the virus in patients. According to Dr. Mark Siegel, he says it may be the holy grail on this because it's just studied in two phase trials and it literally stopped the virus in its tracks. And there wasn't any virus found in the patients that were studied. This drug obviously would be an at-home remedy. It would be a five-day treatment, very similar to the Tamiflu, to stop the virus from reproducing before causing major damage. Siegel said that therapeutics could be on the market in as little as 4 or 5 months. I think this is bigger news than the vaccine, because if you knew that you were that you caught the virus, all you had to do was take 5 days of treatment, you would not die. I think it would make it similar to the flu, and I think that is fantastic. And other quick news, Marty McCary, who is the doctor from Johns Hopkins, who's predicting that the virus is on its way out, said that the vaccinating of older and vulnerable people means death will plummet soon, because as cases linger amongst younger people, they're more likely to be asymptomatic infections or mild non-fatal disease infections. He said this week alone, 10 states had days with zero deaths, and another 10 averaged less than 5 days. So he said we're definitely seeing progress. Dr. Scott Gottlieb says that we'll cross the 60% of those over age 65 vaccinated and over 70% of those over 75 in the days to come. The overall vulnerability of the population to COVID is simply declining, giving more chance to reengage in things we value. We need to look at the vulnerability of the population and measuring the risk, not the prevalence numbers. On Sunday, we had 40,336 new cases in the United States. The last time it was this low was at the end of September. We only had 682 deaths in the United States, also on the same level as the end of September. And cases in South Carolina continue to be around the 500 to 600 range, which is about an 80 to 90% decrease from just a few weeks ago. And that is Gary's good news on. That's the end of our show today. We appreciate everybody for tuning in and listening to yet another episode of Dish and Dirt with Gary Pickering. If you do like this, we'd ask that you please like us, subscribe to us. But most importantly, if you could please pass this around to any real estate agent professional you know, we are trying to make our profession the best profession to work in. And the more information we can get out to other agents, the more that will happen. Y'all take care and have a wonderful weekend.